And it doesn't seem, I don't think that according to like TSA, late April is the cruelest month, but it is one of the weird months for us here. Now we've been raining for like 17 days, sort of like we're in Ireland. You know, Easter already, we had that, all the power went out on Monday, and it was like it was dark for 4 minutes.
But the Mayflowers are coming.
But our scheduling has been interesting, no fault of our own, but thankfully, and there is, of course, the man who keeps us on God's good side, Greg, is here.
Hey, guys.
But a very big thanks because of how the show's been going this month, and we'll have some fun shows ahead. That one of my best friends.
About time.
Well, a really good friend of mine and a really bad influence is here. Once again, please welcome John Adams.
Hey, John.
Yes, I'll never forget. I'm coming out of church one Sunday, and there's a fishing line with a bottle of Irish whiskey. It's like, it leads me to a plate. And that's how I met John.
I caught him.
I've got the running joke now about how he turned me into a reprobate and like a can, like a Marlon Brando type from the 50s. But you have some news, though, is you have your own radio show called, you'll never figure this out, the John Adams Show, which I like the title. I think it's direct.
Clever.
We only call it Carnival of Randomness because we don't want to go two lunatics talk about nothing for an hour. So how did that come about?
Yeah, so it was interesting. It was sort of interesting, for me at least. And my buddy Lee, who owns a business in the Rochester area, Lee Frisbee, owns Frisbee's Landscaping, Ponds, and Patios, which is basically a construction company. He has his own radio show, and it's on Fridays, 106.3 FM, Rochester Free Radio, from 1 to 2. And he asked me to be a guest. So I came on as a guest, and he says to me after the show, "Hey, you know, there's an opportunity for you if you want to do this thing." And I go, "Do what?" He says, "Be a radio guy." And I go, "That's interesting. Okay, let's talk about it." So we went to breakfast the following week and had an hour and 20 minutes of breakfast and talked about what his experience was. And I said, "Yeah, let's talk about it a little bit more." And he got me in contact with station management. And about 2 weeks later, I started with the show.
Was his a business show, too, or was it something different?
His is a business show, yep.
Okay. So that's your main thing, right?
My main thing is business related, my guests' businesses specifically. We talk about success principles and stories around that. We talk about failures and lessons learned, work ethic. We talk about the different experiences that people have had within businesses.
So that's one show for all you losers out there that aren't getting anywhere. This is the kind of a show you should listen
to. I've been saying
so you can get somewhere.
There are people who should listen to the show. And the thing John does, too, is I used to call my professor, Dr. Don Bain. I would say he could talk about sewer systems in Amherst, and it'd be exciting. And John makes the subject interesting because honestly, it could be a little dry if somebody didn't.
Oh, sure.
Here's the pointer, and here's the...
Right, if you're trying to do a PowerPoint on radio, that wouldn't work very well.
Yeah. Well, you know, a successful business is no small feat, no easy thing. I mean, you know, there are ways to do it, and it's good that you have that experience and you kind of guide people along. I think that's awesome.
I was thinking of, like, really interesting jobs and fun that would be fun if you could drink Coors. In the 1970s, pro wrestler Dick Murdoch was paid $90,000 a year just to go to bars, buy Coors for people, and drink with them.
No kidding.
Could you imagine? It's like, "John, here's $200,000. You have to drink Guinness. What do I have to do? Drink Guinness with people." No.
That would be so terrible.
Get him in a full Nelson and wrestle him to the floor.
Yeah, you don't know, like, Dick Murdoch. He had, like, that really good old boy personality, like, I could see. But the funny part about him was a lot of pro wrestlers went to West Texas State. They played football. Mm. Now, Murdoch didn't, but for years he said he did. And they actually, he convinced himself that he's actually in the yearbook, and for alumni, they bring him out.
That sounds like a Gothic Toad story.
Hey, watch it. We're going to get sued and pull up here. We mentioned those guys. See, the Bauman show up out there with, like, a mallet or something.
What's the Gothic Toad?
It's the world's greatest band. They've been on here.
Oh, yeah. Well, apparently, there are some issues with the band, and I'm not sure what the story is, but it disappeared into the mist or something.
They got too popular, and I remember too young, and because I sort of was a road manager for them, you get people bothering us, so they pulled everything. like off. Like they're like, if you could find any of their stuff now,
wow,
it's really, really tough. I have like, so, but I've been told even they're like really good friends of mine. They'll sue us if we play something out here.
Isn't that weird? I mean, be careful what you. I mean, don't you want to be
really
successful?
Good friends,
I don't get that.
But I, it just was too much too soon, I guess. And like the bass player had like some issues, and it just got. I remember like people would be bothering me, and I could
guess,
see.
I guess it's like having a kid too young. You're not gonna be ready for it, you know.
Yeah, and they've always been asked to reunite, and like a couple, like, you know, Rob Mountain was in, he's done a lot of stuff, but they'll ask him about it now. He's like, you just don't ask Rob about it. Talk about Lou Gramm all you want. Cause
well, you know what? That's an interesting phenomenon, actually. The trauma that sets in if you have a situation, musicals or art or whatever, that doesn't go well, and you're just scared to die. You don't even want to touch it. You don't even want to get back to it. You don't want to talk to the people. I mean, that's severe trauma to me. That's like, you know, money doesn't do anything. It's like, really, you don't even want to be in the same room with this person.
You know what I almost get like
to
too. Like sometimes, get over like it. When you're a kid or you're young, did you ever like really aspire to do something, and then you started doing it? And you're like, no. Now I had a friend, buddy of mine. He just wanted to go to Notre Dame. Just really, really wanted to go to Notre Dame. So he gets really good grades. So he's going to go visit Notre Dame. He comes back and goes, God, I freaking hate Notre Dame.
Wow.
And end up going to Virginia Tech. But you get that because I went to, like, for colleges, I went to one place, and I was going to go there. And the thing was, I'm glad I went to the, for some reason, there was, like, a introduction stuff during the summer. And I went there, and I'm just going, this place is not for me.
Yeah, that happens. I mean, you know, jobs can be like that sometimes, and even though you're skilled and everything, you go into a place, the vibe, the culture, whatever you want to call it, it sometimes just doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't know. But I get, like, I don't think, and again, I think business owners are very underappreciated. It's like the ones who, people want the services, the goods, the jobs, but they're the bad guys. And it always gets me, having run done businesses that, like, are small business. Did you realize being a small business owner, you're a millionaire?
I've got closets full of $100 bills. Are you kidding? Yeah, just like every other business owner out there.
That is
a joke.
Yeah, right?
People just get...
I have tens of dollars.
I remember, like...
Yeah, I work 80 hours a week to get paid half the amount I would if I had a job.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, Greg's one of the rare drummers. He's so successful. He's got islands that he's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in my brain. So, well, you know, speaking of weird business things, real quick, have you heard the latest from the Burton Cummings situation?
No, thanks.
Okay, so there's this Guess Who band that's a tribute band. And I think their
you
old bass
tell
player...
Us the name of it or we have to guess?
I'm not sure. Guess Who? No, they're not The Who. They're the Guess Who. But I think it's the bassist and one other guy. And they're going around and around, you know, promoting this thing. And what Burton Cummings did is very unprecedented, I guess. So what he did, he took all his performance rights off any songs that he wrote. So none of those guys, if they do them, they get in big, big trouble. So he got with his lawyers and stuff, and he said, okay, it's like basically illegal to do those songs now that he wrote. Because he just doesn't want them doing it. Because people think it's going to be him and Bachman, and it isn't, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's very interesting.
You always wonder, I know John Kay, Stephen Wolf had a huge thing with, and the one guy in the band is like the perfect spinal, like Goldie St. Gold or something.
Oh, Goldie St. John.
Yeah, Goldie St. John. It's like a Spinal Tap name.
Yeah.
But John Kay got him where he caught him where they can't use the rights or anything.
Wow.
And it's amazing to
see intellectual property.
Because there's like
right?
a story about Kiss, and it's like people who met him early on, they were fine because they were all on the same page. And I think you get people together, you have a common goal. But then they don't, once you make it, you don't somehow hit you when all your different personalities come out.
I have a personal theory about that. To me, it's kind of like divorce lawyers. You can go into a divorce situation, at least in my mind, I'm thinking this, and it's like, well, you know, it's just not working, blah, 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 blah. And then the lawyer goes, well, you know, you can do this, and you can get this, and if he does this, or she, and then they put ideas in your head. And I'm sure these record company people do the same thing. Hey, you write all the songs. You should be taking over. The next thing you know,
Or it could be an agent.
It happens.
Yep. I can see how that would work out. The other part of this whole process is that a lot of these bands start when they're kids. You know, they're 17, 18, 20 years old. They're really not full adults yet.
Right.
They haven't experienced the world as adults. They're not processing things as adults. And, you know, you get this ragtag group of people together that are very creative and very talented, and they make this amazing music, and then they start to grow as people. And at the same time, they haven't actually negotiated their business relationship as a group amongst each other. And so as they age and they go through life, they start growing apart. And as they grow apart, you get this little rub over here and this little frustration here.
Right.
After years, it grows and grows. And now you've got an adult person thinking about things as adult issues, and you're dealing with people you've been friends with since you were kids that you actually didn't negotiate anything like, hey, you want to be the bass player in my band?
Right.
Yeah, yeah, I'll do that. And that's the end of the negotiation.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
You get together, and now you're a band. The band becomes a business. There's no further conversation around that business structure or business relationship.
But somebody's got the big agenda, and you might not.
And there's, the thing. People forget it's a business, too.
Yeah.
There's, actually a serious line near the end of Spinal Tap where Marty DeBerge is interviewing the bass player, Derek Smalls. He's like, you realize, this whole thing's, sort of an adolescent fantasy you've been living. And, you know, but it means, when you're caught up in this bubble, you're not in the real world.
Right.
But there are bands who, like it or not, like them, they treat it just as a business. And that was one of the bands was Queen, where they weren't really friends, but they got along fine, but it wasn't like they hung out. What they would do is, okay, we did an album with Torcia. Then they get back together.
And they respected each other.
Yeah, well, they're educated guys. They're not, Brian, astrophysicists or something. I mean, these guys aren't dumb, so they know kind of that they have
to go
beyond.
You know, there's other bands where they grew up together, though, and then they didn't grow.
Well,
I actually came across a great saying. It's when you die, hell is you, the person you're meeting, the person you could have been.
Oy.
Which
Ooh.
Got me.
I like that.
Made me miserable for weeks. But there's quite something I've been focusing on for business and anything in life. I've been starting to talk about how much negativity can you take. And the way I mean that is anything you're going to do, you have to put the work in.
So there's no doubt.
Say you're you don't have to worry about, about being a bodybuilder. Say you're serious. You have to do, and we don't want to do the cheat way.
Well, this is a huge process
to
get involved in just doing that, right? And the same thing with business. There's a process. There are steps you have to take. There's work you need to put in. Who is it? Mr. Wonderful. I can't remember his
name. Paul Arndorf. Pro wrestler?
No. Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank. Business guy.
Right.
He says, it's nearly impossible for people to make their first $100,000 and have that set aside to be an investment into a larger endeavor. He says it takes a tremendous amount of work, a tremendous amount of planning, and very few people get there. And what you alluded to earlier, Rob, is that when the average person views the average business person, they think that that business person, just because they're in business, has closets full of money just waiting to be spent on something. And that's not the case. For most people, it's almost hand-to-mouth. Now, there are some people that are very successful to make six figures a year after taxes, but they're using that to live their lives. They're using that to support their home, buy their cars, go on vacations, just like somebody who's making W-2 wages would make $60,000, $80,000, $100,000, and they would use that money to go on vacation and to buy their homes and to buy their cars. So it's not millions of dollars,
right?
And I think about the risk and about the negativity factor. One of the best stories of my family was my uncle Harold Hummel, and he was around 27, 28, and he just didn't like what he was doing. He worked at a funeral parlor. He was selling vacuums. Now, keep in mind, he had a wife and a family, and he's like, I don't want to do this. So he started his own business. He put it all online, worked, and he founded Clover Pool Supplies.
Wow.
Clover Pool. But then I saw later some of the stuff that people trying to get in with him because he was
they don't want to do the groundwork
stuff and everything else. And it always got me. One of my little life stories was he would hire you for the summer. And now you get paid for, like, being a kid in those days.
Right.
Good money, and he wouldn't torture you. He wanted you to be a kid. So it would be, like, maybe, like, 15 hours a week.
Right.
So some of my friends were like, yeah, let's do it.
Right.
And but then I had other neighborhood kids who wouldn't. So I still picture this in my head the one day. So you get all to buy all the kids stuff. You know, I get my albums, my comic books, my bazooka gum. So one day I remember was, out of all things, was a lemon ice from Burger King. And one of the kids was like, why don't you buy me one of those? Like, hey, we'll give you an opportunity. This, he looks at me and goes, you're spoiled.
Spoiled. After having spent the
smart
money you worked for, you're spoiled.
Okay, so wait a minute. So you got to back up a second. How does the funeral home and vacuum cleaners even remotely connected?
Well, he's like, you know, he had a really good, he was a salesman personality. He always, you know, and he used to like to brag. I used to go, God, why does he talk about like his money and stuff? No, he wasn't bragging. That's what he was good at. You know, because they were jobs.
Right. And you can do more than one thing at a time.
I remember, like, when he passed
away.
That's an interesting
mix.
When he passed away, there was these old Puerto Rican gentlemen crying their eyes out. I'm like, who are these guys? So I actually went to talk to them, and they're like, you know, in those days, and my uncle was born in 1919, so we're talking like 60s,
right,
50s. It's like, nobody would hire us just because of who they were.
Oh,
it's
sure.
Like, you know, your uncle hired us and took a chance on us, and we're always grateful.
Wow.
Yeah, we've talked about that before on here. It's like the whole thing where people think prejudice is some new thing. It isn't.
You don't think everything's
been around forever.
You don't think things are better now.
Well, I mean, it was just against other certain groups. You know, I mean, now it's a different group, but back then it was other groups. And, you know, my dad even told me that, like, changing his name, all that stuff, because it was easier to get a job. And that's just the way it was in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, it's life. You know, it's reality. Reality is not easy. Everything. It's not. But that's the big thing I'll go back to again. It's like most people, like my friend Tony, who owned Empire Comics, you know, he would talk about, you know, people come in here and think I'm a millionaire. You sell some of these comics.
Right.
I know what he made. He also did snow plowing and installing security systems and fences.
On the side.
Yeah.
Well, you can guarantee it's going to snow at some point.
At some point. You know, I was in the snow plowing business for a while, and the average... So there's a couple of ways you do this, right? You have a contract. Somebody pays you $200, $250.
Right.
And no matter how much it snows, you go out and plow their driveway, right?
Right.
Or they pay you per trip. And there was a point to where the average snowfalls that required plowing was 17 a year. And then a whole bunch of people on contract, that year it snows for service 56 times.
Wow.
So 56 services means you're upside down in the amount of money that you would expect to earn per trip. And so you go back to potentially charging per trip, right, instead of having a contract. And there was one point that I was partnered up with a guy. There was one point it had not snowed for 11 weeks or some ridiculously long period of time. It was a long, long period of time. And this was a and that might not be the right number, but it was a long time. We had not had any cash flow at all. We had bills that were piling up.
And you still got trucks to maintain.
We got trucks to maintain. We got bill. We got the payment on the truck. We've got the insurance you got to pay. And my buddy calls me from Virginia, and he says, it's Tuesday. They've already canceled school for Friday. We've got a big storm coming in. You might want to think about coming down here. This was Snowmageddon 2010.
Wow.
And it did not snow from Tuesday to Thursday. That week again, and the projections were that it wasn't going to snow for two more weeks. So my partner and I fueled up our trucks, got in the trucks, we drove to Virginia. A normal trip is six and a half hours. It took us almost 13 to get there, because by the time we got to Pennsylvania, we were driving through inches of snow.
Wow.
On Thursday night, arrived in town about 1 o'clock in the morning. And at 8 in the morning, I had a full voicemail on my phone because my buddy had gone out on Wednesday and put in all of the mailboxes, emergency snowplow service, call this number. And we saved the company because we would have gone under if that hadn't happened.
Now, that is ingenuity.
Speaking of that, awesome. If you two would like to invest, I've been trying to start up a snowplowing company in Arizona. Give me your money and I'll sign a contract with you. No, it's ingenuity, though. There's a guy who stopped.
Well, that's foresight. I mean, you have to be able to kind of anticipate and have a plan.
Who stopped in at the corner. What he did one year in Florida is he got six hot dog carts. He brought White Hots down there. Now, you might not think of it here, but you can't get White Hots down there.
Right.
Yeah, there's only two real places in the world you can get White Hots, in Germany or in Rochester.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, because they're bratwurst.
They would call them, they're basically bratwurst or something like that. I mean, that's the same thing, sort of, I guess. But that's the ingenuity of it.
Yeah. So here, I've got this business idea. You guys might want to invest. Andy, I know you're listening. Think about this as well. It's you get a whole bunch of leaflets. You know, like in wartime, they drop the leaflets on the enemy?
Right.
Right? So they'd use helicopters and airplanes to do that. So I think that we should get leaflets on pallets, drop them out of a C-130 over neighborhoods like Pittsburgh and Brighton, Penfield, and it would be litter cleanup service. Call this number.
There you go. Create.
I'm actually laughing.
Create a need. That's business 101 right there.
When Antifa started, and these idiots were like blocking. I was visiting my friend in Philly who blocked. Somebody dropped a bunch of McDonald's applications.
That's great.
And I got pissed off actually online because I was writing about this, and somebody wrote, you know, there's no jobs. And I just said, I run a business, do you? I could tell you how many people I tried to hire and I'm not doing it. But it's funny because I used to live in Alexandria, and the funny part, you thinking of snow, literally, if we were doing like a show here or anywhere in Alexandria, touched the ground in D.C., they would close everything.
Wow.
I'm sitting there laughing. I'm like...
My buddy sent me pictures of the grocery store, the bread, the milk, cleaned out.
Wow.
Cleaned out. You get just fractions of an inch of snow and everybody panics.
It's crazy. And driving, too, it's like, or people getting gas, and it's like, really, you know, like, well, anxiety takes over, you know, it's like, the worst comes to mind, you know, what if this, what if that?
I remember, like, 2020, it's just about the time, it's like St. Patrick's Day, and my friends 1916 are playing out at Iron Smoke, and I'm talking to Alicia, I'm texting, like, I don't know, I want to go, I just, it's this weird crap going on, it's like, I'll go down there, right? So I go down there, it's actually not for St. Patrick's Day there, it's not huge, but I leave, I said, okay, I better stop in Wegmans. Who do I, as soon as I go to Wegmans, there's Brunette.
Yeah.
And we're stuff like, Tommy, we go in, there's like no bread. No,
yeah,
like,
that's crazy. It was nuts.
Remember, did you hear about the guy who bought like $10,000 worth of toilet paper that tried to return it?
Oh, that was in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did not while they returned.
Well, you think about that. You don't want to use like leaves there because there might be a snake in Australia. Or blue ring octopus.
Eastern
you
brown.
Pick up a blue ring octopus.
I still find that the weirdest thing that comes to your mind. With the pandemic, is that
the toilet paper?
Yeah,
yeah.
It just seems like an odd. Yeah, I don't know.
I remember the conversation I had with my fiance, now fiance Tamara, then girlfriend, and we had just come back from a trip from someplace. I think we were in Florida. Came back, and she was telling me that all of her friends were saying the toilet paper sold out, and I said that's BS. There's just no way that that's actually happening. And we went to like four or five different locations looking for toilet tissue, and it was all sold out.
Wow.
And I was like, this is real? This is actually happening? And it was.
Monsters are due on Maple Street. But the funniest part, during my dad's dementia and my years of hell, one of his things he would do was he would steal toilet paper and hide it around the house. So literally, it's like he prophesied. I'm looking around the house when I find toilet paper. It's like he knew.
He's like the toilet paper squirrel.
He was like a seer where he knew. It's like, I might not be here by then, but I'm going to save you and do you a favor.
Either that or he was just wanting, you know, figuring, well, in case I, you know, have to go somewhere, anywhere I walk, I would go be one of
these sandwiches he would make with cheese, liverwurst, and a dab of toilet paper on it.
Do you remember the Facebook memes that showed, like, 10 squares of toilet tissue and be like, $30, I know what I got.
Yeah, right.
I'm surprised they didn't do, like, the little thing like, alleyway. Charmin?
Right.
That's a good
hey, Mac, you got a minute?
That's another topic, like, for your show more than ours, because we joke mostly about stuff. We're light and merry lads. But the idea of personal growth, and, like, one thing that's got me, like, I've been, like, analyzing my life and evolving. I sort of had to grow up with some of these things. And I actually was, like, in a really weird, serious moment where I'm going, you know, I've lost a little bit of my humanity losing my dog and not getting another one, but I can't get another one. But like dealing with my dad all those years, my own health problems caused from dealing with my dad and dealing with the show. You know.
Oh boy.
But then and other things, but I see what I see sometimes, people complain and complain and complain and they don't change, they don't do anything.
Well, and the reality is that they can complain for weeks or months or years, and that doesn't change a thing, right? It's action that changes things. And sometimes there's no way to change what somebody's complaining about. There's you have zero control over it. And so you figure the amount of energy and effort that they put into complaining about something they have no control over, if they put that energy and effort into personal development, like you were saying, they might be able to improve their lives.
Right.
Well, I've sort of given up. Like, for my true friends, I'll help them. I'll do anything. But I would try to help people.
Sometimes if you change what's around you, it'll affect other things.
Well,
you know, how things kind of
like
work together. And then, like, if you, you know what I'm trying to say?
Well, especially if the people around you aren't the right people.
Well, I have, like, there's a kid who came into Empire. I could write a whole book about Empire Comics. And Tony was a wise man. I learned a lot. So I've been there. This guy comes in. He's not a kid anymore. He comes in. I guess he just moved back into town. He's talking to Tony. They knew each other, obviously. He goes, man, you know, he's like 32 now. He's working. He's got it all together. He goes, man, I can't believe it. I see these people I hung with when I'm 19. They're still the same thing. They're just getting drunk. They're not doing anything. But I said one of my saddest things in life is I tried to help people. Like, if they wanted a job, I tried to find something. They're like, I just want this. They don't do it, though, then.
Well, yeah. Well, there's inertia in people's lives, right?
Right.
It takes a significant amount of effort to get past that. And if somebody enjoys their misery, you're not going to be able to pull them out of it. They have to do it themselves.
It gives them purpose for some weird reason.
Yeah. Well, so one of our little...
terrible purpose.
Yeah, my friend Mike Augustadale and I were talking. Now, I'm not a Trump fan, and we don't really talk politics, but I do think there's, like, a derangement. And I think, you know, it's on both sides. You see, like, some crazy stuff about people saying the Democrats. Everything's a conspiracy. But there is, like, a Trump derangement, so then more he's, like, the Antichrist.
Mm.
You know? And I worry he loses. I think people are going to lose their purpose, some of them.
So that's an interesting conversation because... While he was in office, people were saying he's literally Hitler.
They have no idea about history or anything. And I'll tell you the really quick funny story I've told before. I'm walking down by the beach, and there's a guy. I'm minding my own business. He's like going on about, you know, Trump's a fascist. He's Mussolini, and I don't know if I get him. He's like, oh, you don't even know who Mussolini is, I bet. So I go, El Duce of, he's the leader of Italy from 1921 to 43. Before he was editor of Avanti, the socialist newspaper, there was a form of, government was corporatism, which is like an interlayered green socialism. Closest thing to it now is Gaddafi's Libya. But could you define fascism for me? I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, oh, I'm busy. Yeah. And he runs away.
Well, you know, I've always thought this too, and I'm not astute with politics a lot, but my whole thought with Trump, I sometimes think the reason he's a big threat is because he's trying to circumvent the traditional way that stuff is done.
I think he shows them for what they are, too. Because
right,
the thing,
that's what I'm
like,
saying.
There's the one point about, well, oh, you want oil? I'll just go take over Syria, which is what they wanted to do with
the military. Well, I mean, everybody says it should be run like a business, and I guess he was trying, and then they didn't like that either.
But my biggest
and he's trying to not do things the way Congress and everything does things. He's like... And that's a threat to them.
Yeah,
and I think
point,
they're after him.
My point about it, too, though, is just that, he's just noxious in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he's not like the devil. You have no idea. You don't know about Mao, Pol Pot, Castro, Stalin, the guy with the mustache, maybe we can't say on the air, you know, and all these other people. You have no freaking idea. And I've been in the Soviet Union, and this wasn't even when it was in its worst time by far. You know, the old joke during Stalin was, like, if you heard a knock on your door in the middle of the night, you better hope your building's on fire.
Right, yeah.
What a terrible desire to have, right?
Or the good story about, you know, Stalin used to, like, smoke his pipe in the morning and he couldn't find it. So he tells his henchman, Beria, you know, go look for it. So Beria comes back. He's like, Comrade Stalin. And Comrade Beria, don't worry, I found my pipe. But Comrade Stalin, I've already got 5 people to confess they stole it.
Good one.
You know,
now, when you talk about this derangement syndrome and people are saying, hey, Trump is literally Hitler, right? you got to ask your question. You got to ask the question, like, where do you go from there?
Right.
Right? I don't believe that Trump is literally Hitler. Hitler was a horribly evil man. I don't think that Trump is nearly that way. I don't like the guy. I mean, like you said, he's obnoxious. He's an egomaniac. Not my cup of tea at all.
Some policies I like, but I could say it about just about everybody.
What is the derangement syndrome? What is the flip side like for the conservative side speaking about, or is it? The conservative side speaking about others on the left. What would be the derangement syndrome equality be?
There's quite a lot of derangement syndromes, like
that they waste money on losers.
Well, that's government in general.
Yeah.
I think, Greg, we could have a really long conversation around government. You said, you know, that Trump challenges the way things have always been done. I don't think that's a bad thing, because
I don't either.
The results we've had from the way things always have always been done at this point is a $30+ trillion deficit, debt for our country, and a huge lack of actual results. Which, going back to business, if this was a business, it would fail. Tens of years ago, right? There was,
it's a flawed 60, model.
67 years ago. The reality is that business operates with less than ideal resources at every single moment. There's never a point you have the ideal number of resources. You have to make it work without having enough resources to get your ideal result. And that's not government.
Right.
If government doesn't have enough money to do something, they just pass a law stating that we're going to print more money. And you can't do that with business. You actually have to be able to exchange goods and services to somebody that's willing to pay for them at a level that they're willing to pay for it, and you can make a little bit of money at the same time. Otherwise, you're running a hobby. You're not running a business.
No, there's a point like this, you know, I don't bother online because you're just dealing with crazies. But I just got – there was this one thing about – somebody posting all these great things about the left or whatever, and I'm not going to argue. Some yes, some no. He's going on. It's like, I was going to say humility, too. So he has kidney problems, right? And he's got, like, his legs are swelling up. So I said, did you know Trump did all these things to make it easier for kidney patients? Now, you can look this up. Anyone want to look it up? And he's really done a lot for him. Now, is this something not publicized?
Right.
And I guess you're not going to take advantage of him, right? You know, and it's like, we get so crazy either way now. It's like, nobody wants truth about either thing.
Yeah, I think the left used to be a little more balanced. I think now they've just gotten on. They have an agenda that, to me, is very
left into the right.
So yeah, look at them.
It's gotten extreme on both sides.
If you look at the parties from the 80s, and the parties from today. So you've got the Democrats and Republicans. So we'll call those left and right, right? And so when there was a bill proposed that wasn't perfectly Republican from the Democrats, some of the Republicans would interact with the Democrats, and you could get some things done
right
as a group. And then when the Republicans proposed a bill that wasn't perfectly Democratic on for the left side, they would still get together and collaborate and make – there was a little bit more, maybe 30% or 40% interchange, right, where they would cross the lines and actually have a conversation that was productive. And the difference between then and now is that if something isn't 100% – Republican or 100% Democrat, the people in those parties don't go anywhere. They will not cross the line. They hold to the party. It's the party decision that they're going to have this as an agenda. And if something is outside of that agenda, they don't move from it. And as a result, we're at a huge gridlock.
That kind of scares me. It's almost like the party, you know, always reminds me of the old commie thing.
Or 1984.
The state.
And nobody admits, like, they're wrong about anything, but there's, like, a funny thing to leave this while we have Lister.
Yeah.
Back when, you know, okay, I was not a Bush.
Go George, back to comic books.
I was not a George W. Bush fan at all, in a lot of ways. And I was not a George W. Bush fan at all, but I remember, like, seeing all these people going on about him. And so my friend Mike and I were going to make a film when Obama won. There's this stoner sitting there playing video games.
Right.
They announce Obama wins. He jumps up. He goes to get the job. No, then 4 years later, they were doing the same stuff.
Mm.
But one of the things I was thinking of, not comic books this time, but I was thinking of, like, film and stuff and how it influences, because I found out Excalibur was just 44 years now.
Wow.
That's one of our big films.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
If you were a kid, you were scarred for life if you saw Armor after seeing that book.
Yeah, what an awesome movie, though. I mean, the story of that, it was an Arthurian legend, obviously, but it was wonderful.
It was very well done, yeah.
It was brutally violent. It had intrigue.
It had Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, he was the guy that went against the other knights in that film.
Because it was Guinevere's father.
Held to his principle.
Yeah.
And that caused a battle. That battle was awesome to watch on film.
There's a knightbee. I'm not, well, let's surrender to a squire. Okay, knightbee. But there's like a scene from Spamalot where they're going on. Arthur's like, and yes, I will wed. Yes, sir, what is your name? Guinevere. Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
But I get chills like watching scenes from that movie still.
I'm going to have to go back and look at that now.
Well, it's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a long, it's like, what is it, like 2.5 hours maybe?
It's a long movie.
And if you don't know a little about Arthur, it's like they have the stuff about the Fisher King in there. And when you're a kid, yeah, you like the fight stuff. But some of it's surreal unless you like, you'll like it. But
well, I'm sure I will.
And like Nicole Williamson's great as Merlin. It's like, where is evil where you least expect it? It's like, where's the kitchen? Follow your nose.
Have you ever seen the Once Upon a Time series?
Yeah.
That was an interesting concept.
But I just get chills from so many scenes in that movie, though. It's like the scene when Lancelot comes, when they're, like, surrounded, Lancelot comes back.
Oh, at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Because they were doing some, like, I actually did a paper about how Lancelot's portrayed in the movie, because it's a little different.
Yeah. And I'm glad that some of these stories are told a little bit differently. Otherwise, you'd be watching 20 different versions of the same story.
Right.
That almost all are alike. And what's the entertainment in that, right? I'm okay with some artistic license.
Sure. What if, you know, imaginary. They used to call that imaginary stories in the comics.
Well, have you seen the one with the Clive Owen and Keira Knightley?
I've seen some of it. I've not seen
it. It's more they try to be, but it's also, there's a book series by, like, Bernard Cornwell called The Warlord.
Oh, that is my favorite book series, by the way.
And it's about Arthur, isn't it?
It's actually centered around a spearman in Arthur's army. And, I can't remember his name. That sucks.
Spear guy.
Yeah, spear guy. So this guy was thrown into a pit by a druid, a pit of spikes. And he missed the spikes. And when Merlin saw this happen, because Merlin was there and participating in the ceremony, he said, this guy is special as a baby, and he adopted him, and so Merlin basically became his father figure, and he was brought up within Merlin's household, but he was also taught how to be a swordsman and a spearman for the army, and he ended up commanding people, and Arthur, he was Arthur's direct report, so he would report directly to Arthur. What an amazing, amazing book series. It was The Winter King, Excalibur, and Enemy of God.
And it's called the Warlord series overall.
Okay.
And Enemy of God, the third of the series, that's my favorite book of all time. It absolutely has everything that you would want as far as drama is concerned. It's sad, it's happy, there's battles, there's sex, there's everything involved in this book. And if you want to escape reality, it's an amazing way to do it.
Wow. I'm going to rush right out to the last remaining library and get it.
The interesting thing about it is that I was told that I needed to read that series by a friend of mine, and The Winter King is the first book, and it took me until like page 60 before I started actually enjoying it.
Hmm.
She said, you've got to get past the first part.
It's slow.
It's
setting up.
Starts
slowly. Yeah.
You hear a lot of names of people. You have no idea who these people are. They're old English and Welsh names.
Right.
Right. And you're like, okay, who the hell is this person they just brought up, and where do they fit in the story? You can't figure it out. And at somewhere around 50 or 60 pages, you start putting it together.
Huh. And that's cool. That's good writing.
I finished the Saxon saga, finally, with Cornwall. And what he does, too, is he puts all the names, and I'm like, forget this. I'm just going to read it from the spot. Yeah. Ethel, and I know from Vikings, Ethelstan, but they do that. But what I like Cornwall does at the end, too, is he'll go, okay, this person was historical. He tells the real historical story.
It's called historical fiction, right? So it's real based people. In history with real names and some actual events, but with elaborations that are fiction.
I didn't read them. I've only read the first one still. How did they handle the killer rabbit?
I would like to explain that to you, Rob, but I think you should go back and read the series to figure that out because it's a special part of the book. Because
I always wondered, like, if they had, like Star Trek, where they had guys with the red armor. Well, you guys go down there. Was it
ones who were marked for death?
Was it a Welsh killer rabbit?
No.
But...
It's been an English
that wouldn't have
culinary
been
too
well.
Joke.
It was supposed to be.
Nasty, big, pointy teeth.
It was something to say, all right? I don't know.
What were you saying?
No, I was going to make my announcement, but I'll wait.
Go on. You can make it now. Why not?
Okay. So today we were watching something on TV, me and my girlfriend, Debbie. So she said, we were watching an old movie serial. And, like, she hasn't seen these 1,000 times, right? And she sort of reminded me that it's been 19 years today that we met. Hmm. And, of course, I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Were you playing it? I don't remember.
At the Bugs Yard.
Oh.
I met her at the
Bugs
Yard.
I thought I met you somewhere else. So how did she know when we met? I'm glad she remembers. I'm going to wait until 20 next year.
Well, happy anniversary on the day of your meeting.
And you wouldn't think the Bug Jar is a place to find a life partner and romance, but I
well,
did.
A couple hours of life partner at least. Romance.
But, you know, hi, Debbie, love you.
You know, even though
nice
the story,
job.
Hi, Debbie, you put up with this guy?
Congratulations, Debbie.
So I was there the first night the Bug Jar opened, because it was like a dance club, but I had friends who lived on Priam. We would go to Hitchcock's, the Woody's.
Oh,
and we'd
go,
there used to be Rosie's, which was a different type of bar from a dance
right,
hall.
Right, right. I remember Rosie's.
And my friend's like, let's go see. So we get down there, and I don't know if they charged a cover or not, because I know they charged a cover for a while. But my friend walks in and goes, you got to come and see this. And to this day, I can tell when people have never been there because they're all, look at the ceiling.
Yeah.
I see Bobby T. After all these years, I still see stuff on the ceiling I haven't seen before.
I still haven't figured out how they did all that.
They probably had ladders. I guess grimy or something.
Well, I know, but I mean...
Is that new technology?
How do you hammer a chair on a table? It seems like a big task to me.
Maybe there was an apartment above and they just turned it upside
down. Yeah, there you go. It could be.
But they've had like a lot of, like, I know it's like Abilene. I remember seeing Larkin Poe there, Ellie Venable.
Right.
They had the White Stripes at one of their Bug Fests.
Wow, that's cool.
Oh, I remember that. Yep.
Remember when they had Bug Fest? It was like almost always raining.
Yeah.
That's Rochester in general.
Plant.
If you want to guarantee rain, plan an outdoor
something,
party.
Right? Right.
But it's had a weird history with me because, like, I didn't live here in the 90s for the most part. Then I came back. You know, but the other thing, too, is, like, I'll talk to friends when we play there. You know, people, things change. Like, a lot of, like, I don't know people who work there. But then, like, my friends who are playing. But otherwise, it's, like, all different. Well, before I used to walk in, I would know everybody.
The last time I was at the Bug Jar.
I saw you there once.
It was a long, long time ago. Daniel Zea, who you had as a guest on last week, was playing in his band at the time. What a great night that was. He's just an excellent guitarist.
He is. He's very good.
And the time before that I was at the Bug Jar, I was maybe 35, 36, 37 years old.
Oh, so a couple years ago.
Right, yeah, it was 15 years ago. And I had some friends that were in their maybe mid to late 20s, and they invited me out. And I said, okay, I'll show up for a little while. It turned out to be one of those under 8 or less than 18. 21. Yeah, like 18 and over nights. And I walked in, and I lasted about 20 minutes at the Bug Jar. I looked around, and I go, these people look like they're 14.
Right.
I had
right?
one.
And I had to say, hey, this isn't my scene. I got to go.
It's like it's right. worth telling again for our new listeners, but my friend wanted me to go see Shiny Toy Guns. They're like an L.A. band or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, now let's just be polite. She had some issues at the time. She didn't show up. We'll leave it at that. So I go, and I'm like, damn. It's like everybody's looking at me like I'm a narc. Yeah. There's like young kids. I'm like sitting back like this, and like they're just like looking at me. I'm like, look at my, like, you just don't fit in. So the first band they had, and I'm so glad I don't know the name of them. They sucked in every way. I feel bad, but they come out in lab coats. Obviously, not our friends, the Isotopes, they're like, but they come out. They're trying. They're just nothing. Like no charisma. Nothing, and I'm sitting there like, where are you? Like,
are they trying to do a Devo thing
yeah,
or something?
Devo meets, I don't know, something. So I'm just going, oh. This
Devo meets Beaker.
Yeah. This is horrible. And then for some reason, I just go after they play with it. I go, God, this fucking sucks. I see it just after they play a song and it's quiet.
Nice. Oh, my God.
And then Johnny Toy Guns was pretty good. It was only like $13.
That's a great name.
You know, they weren't bad. It's hard to describe them, a little like, sort of like, not really industrial, like power pop, stuff like that. Mm. But I thought it was one of my moments where I just sat there and go, but sometimes when you walk in, you just feel like the weirdo in the room. You just don't belong at all.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
No, not them. This, you know.
Well, I'd probably be the weirdo in the room at one of those shows as well.
But, you know, one of the other things we're going to talk about, like movies that inspired you, thinking of Excalibur. Have you had anything, Greg? That actually, I mean, yeah, movies are movies, but you just really, like, this really affected me or whatever.
Wow. I needed some time to think about
that.
The
Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp, obviously.
No, I never saw that. Probably never
will. Now, one that got me a couple of years ago is John Renault's movie called Drunk Bus, and it's filmed here. And when I was watching it, I'm like, wait a second.
I like Dragon Slayer.
That was a great movie.
I thought that
the
was
the movie that I bought tickets to with a friend so we could sneak into heavy metal.
Yeah. I just rebought that. I've been watching that.
Because it was our tactic, what we would do for a rated R movie, is we would buy a PG, then we'd just sneak in the other theater.
Yeah. Have you seen that in the last few years, heavy metal?
I own it.
Yeah, I just got it, Blu-ray. Yeah, it's interesting. It's so different than I thought it was.
What I find, and I found this with many of these types of things from our youth, is you watch something when you're a kid, you're like, this is great, I love it.
Right.
So awesome. And then you watch it later on as an adult, you're like, this movie's dread.
What was I thinking? Yeah.
All I could think was the John Candy thing where he's like, gets into the muscle man. It's like, and I see this beautiful woman, I got my door king out. No, it's Stern and selling narcotics to TV in his schoolyard just as a nun. But yeah, but like the whole story behind Drunk Bus, it's like it's a kid at college, looks like it's R.I.T. and he's driving the drunk bus, and I guess these things exist at night.
Right.
He gets into like trouble, so they hire a bodyguard for him. And it's all about like he's like a ghost in the town, and the bodyguard's sort of teaching him life lessons about how to, like, you have to break the loop and grow. And there's a character in there that it's me in the future. And people are like, why is he doing that? Well, that's me.
We will await the future, Rob.
Yeah.
I've not seen that movie yet, but I've seen some clips. It looks actually quite hysterical.
Why do they call him Fuck You Bob? Wait for it. We could do that on our show now.
I like, actually, I thought What About Bob was a very good movie, too. Because it's just like, I like Bill Murray, and I just like his sort of, his obnoxious obsessiveness with Dreyfus. It's just a funny, story.
Kind of like
he just stalks this guy because he's such a neurotic. He's got to go see this guy even when he's on family vacation and stuff. And I don't know, it was just a pretty funny concept.
Remember Office Space?
Yeah.
So I liked Office Space up until the scene where they were destroying the printer.
Right.
I thought it got goofy and not goofy in a good way, but goofy in a bad way and muddled right after that for almost the rest of the movie. But that first part of Office Space was absolutely hysterical. And then the second part, the thing that I really appreciated is the way that they ended the movie, where they show both those guys outside working on a construction site, and they're like, yeah, working outside, beautiful day.
Yeah.
Fucking A.
Yeah. That would be like going around in a loop a little bit, like, say somebody now would come to you and go, John, I'm really thinking of starting my own business. Which way to go through it? I know you have a friend who you've cloned because of the same name will help you look for one.
Oh, yeah. So John Adams, a friend that will help you find the right franchise business for you. His service is for free. And I don't have his phone number with me right now. But
yeah, it's really him in a big Harpo Marx wig.
John Adams is 6'10" tall. He's a very, very tall guy. Wonderful human being. True to the core, he's just a wonderful human being. Search John Adams of Frannet, F-R-A-N-N-E-T, if you want to find somebody that can help you get a business. But if somebody was to say to me at this point, hey, I want to start a business.
Say no.
Well, no in New York State, maybe.
Yeah, right.
New York State and business don't mix real well. But I would say, what are your interests? Like, what is it that you would do forever without getting paid for it? And start there. And
I don't think I could, like, do a business eating plates.
Well, you could maybe find a business that could be related to eating plates, though. Like,
oh, yeah, that weighs 500 pounds.
You know, if I was going to stay in Rochester and start a business in Rochester and stay in food, which I was in for close to 40 years, I might look for a space in the South Wedge and open up South Wedge Pie and Plates. Because I love pizza, I love plates, I love burgers,
that's
I love hot dogs.
Good name.
Giving that to the universe here. Somebody might be able to use it.
We used to have like a weird idea about like all night curry, but I don't know if that would be good next day.
Well, you know, if you're in England and you go for a curry, they talk about what happens the next day.
I used to get into these big talks with people like this.
We're going back to toilet paper again.
That's one of those funny things about like England, though. Any area will brag about having the best curry, like Birmingham. Yeah. They'll tell you you have the best curry.
Wow. You know, it's interesting they brag about having the best food that they got from a different culture.
Right.
That's the one part about London I found out, like, people who go English, you can find anything there.
Oh, probably the most metropolitan city in the world.
You can find, yeah.
Well, back in the old days, though, spices were a big deal. Trading spices and bringing back stuff. So that's probably...
A war for fought over it.
Yeah. I mean, another culture, like you said, and they come over, and now it's like, oh, this is ours. Well, no, it isn't, you know.
But they have the Spice Girls. They have, like...
You
know,
yeah.
But we have to talk about this because thoughts on the eclipse on Monday?
Oh, Mother Nature screwed us. Yeah. That's really what it comes to. She did not come through for Rochester or Western New York
at
all.
The darkness was cool, but the rest of it was pretty lacking.
You know, Rochester, I was saying, it's like where sometimes could be compared like the Charlie Brown trying to kick the football thing. Because I was telling
like
her, I was going, okay, Sunday, clear.
Yeah.
Tuesday, clear.
Even Saturday night, by 5:30 or so, the sun came out.
Right.
And it was we missed it by the universe. Couldn't turn fast enough for us, you know.
It's crazy that we had a perfect day on Sunday, a perfect day on Tuesday, and Monday was, you know, I was out in Leroy where I live, and literally 25 minutes after the eclipse passed over, we went through the three and a half minutes of darkness. 25 minutes later, it's sunny.
Right.
And it was sunny for like an hour.
And
I thought, what the heck?
Yeah.
Well, I'm walking. I like.
Doesn't that make you think, though? I mean, like atmosphere and Earth rotation. Fraction of an inch or, you know, a couple of hours difference makes
all the difference.
No, a lot of difference.
I disagree. It's like, it means we're Rochester.
Okay.
I was walking around. I could walk around.
You came as your defeatist.
And I could walk around the show and please fans. I get tired doing this. No selfies or autographs here if you see me walking around. So what I saw was, it was kind of funny. Like, I go by, there's all the specials for Monday. Like, one place there's a rocket dog and a space burger.
Yeah.
That's funny. They could call it a UFO burger because a cheeseburger sort of looks like a UFO. So, did you hear about The View and the woman on The View that said that the eclipse could indicate... climate change?
No.
More climate change? And I thought, does this person understand what science is?
Right. Well, that's where I'm going. That's where I was going with the extremism of the parties. It's like everything is like, we can spin this for a climate change thing. We can spin this as a bad for poor people thing. We can, you know, and it's just like, it's become a publicist thing more than politics.
No, if your party makes the economy go well and the other party, you're like, it's just for the rich.
But anyway, is that what she really said?
She said she thought that this was due to climate change.
Wow.
Well, I think what she said was this could contribute to climate change, which, you know, I suppose momentarily it might have contributed to climate change for about 3 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Because it went from light to dark. And, of course, when the sun is blocked out, there's less heating of the earth.
Right.
Right? So you have that 3.5 minutes of less heating of the earth.
And plants go to sleep for 3 minutes.
It's funny, though. Like, okay, so we go for a walk, right? And one of the funniest things was there's these posts online about people seeing a UFO flying around Greece. I saw somebody had a little green toy drone flying around. So, it came in the neighborhood.
I had this idea for an editorial type of, like a New Yorker kind of cartoon. And I told it to my boss because he draws pretty well. And anybody else wants to contribute, you know, send them in. I had an idea. So you'd have two tents, like, you know, like when you have at a festival, mm-hmm. when you're selling merchandise. And one is the Eclipse merchandise. And there's all kinds of people at it. The next one right next to him is the Second Coming of Christ. And, you know, somebody's there all dejected because there's nobody standing there.
Did you play, John, did you play Scorpion's Blackout?
I didn't play any music at all. Because, I you know, perfect transparency here. I knew the totality was going to last 3.5 minutes and be gone very quickly. However, what I did not actually count on was how quickly it became dark.
Yeah.
How quickly it became light again.
Yeah.
We just walked right at the right time.
Very little transition, yeah.
But what's funny, though, there's these kids out there. No, I can't see anything. But I was going back just a little just about risking, because I've read, like, Walter Isaacson's Elon Musk book, and I was going, make up your own mind. And you realize, like him, don't like him, whatever. Make up your own mind. But it's like, people think he inherited all his money. He didn't. But the thing about Tesla was, like, when they went in, he took a thing with stock where had it bombed, he would have made nothing.
Yeah.
You know, there was a point where he was working 19 hours a day to keep that business open.
Yeah, and people don't realize, like, Dalia's dad was a scam artist, and he would get money from his mom and dad about a total of $38,000 after they'd done it. He pretty much started PayPal and everything. But that's all, because I see these things online, I go, why don't you do your own research?
I think he cashed out with his partners. His cut of PayPal was about $180 million. Huge amount of money. But then he took that money and put it into Tesla. And they got down to just a few thousand dollars from that $180
wow.
million. So they burned off quite literally almost that entire $180 million before they turned Tesla around and started profiting some.
I thought they started good with Love Song and that other song. Did they slump on the albums or something? But what do you think caused, like, the big, I think we had like 10% of the tourists they thought we were going to have?
Oh, well, yeah, so my theory is this, is that when I first heard about this eclipse, I was part of a group in Rochester that networks, among other businesses, 2018. So that was 6 years ago. So we've got a group of people that gets excited about the eclipse and think this is a consumer-driven opportunity. There's going to be lots of visitors because we're in the path of totality. There is some data showing that there was going to be a lot of visitors from the 2017 eclipse. And so they spent 6 years Googling and posting on Facebook. So what happens when you are Googling and posting on Facebook a certain subject matter is the algorithms say, we're going to feed more information to this person about this subject matter.
Right.
And I think that the people who are planning for the event just got caught in their own echo chamber.
Mm.
And then there was the weather. So there was a certain number of people that saw the weather forecast and just changed where they were going to go.
Right.
But if you think about Niagara Falls was supposed to have 1 million visitors, Monroe County is supposed to have 500,000 visitors. There was slower traffic in Monroe County on Monday than the average day.
I know.
I would ask for updates from friends. I'm on the nothing. But I think there was a self-fulfilling prophecy, too, where we thought locally, I've got invited to an eclipse party and stuff. Like, I'm not going anywhere. And I had a lot of friends. I'm going to watch from my backyard. Because you heard, like, driving to the show every week, I would see, you know, prepare
severe off, delays.
You know, 3.5 miles, like 40 minutes or whatever.
Crazy.
And I think it's self-fulfilling prophecy. And I'm actually been engaged. We'll have to do another episode with you. Well, you can be on when Dan's on.
I'd love to come back.
Just don't sing.
That wouldn't be a good thing.
Eclipse Day, I was at that gig at House of Guitars, right? I played with Mason Tyler. And it was cool. I mean, we took a break and it got dark and it was cool. But they played Dark Side of the Moon while it was going on. And that was going on and it started to get dark and it was actually very perfect. And then later we all went in the store for talking to Kurt and a couple other guys in there. And the kid that was running the program or the computer, he goes, "Oh, I don't know. I just sort of guessed where it was going. Metaphorically, he dropped the needle, and it just happened to work out.
Did you put on the Wizard of Oz? That it was Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, right.
It was destined to be.
Yeah, I've done that too. That's pretty funny.
Now, I've gotten into the idea, and we'll have to do another show on collective delusions because I'm reading them more. Because like a lot of, like I know on
Urban Legends,
TikTok, no, but also like on the things you hear probably aren't true mostly, but we think they are.
Right.
Like as priorities. Like there's one study about, you know, you see these places like in Silicon Valley where they've got the yoga and all this stuff. On priorities it's way down. And now a lot of people are looking more for fulfilling careers more than, you know, something where they enjoy themselves going to work than just,
you know. Well, some of the simplest things though that they offer is huge. You know, daycare. You know, things that are just, they've kind of figured out people need actual substantive perks.
Yeah, I mean, you're also saying, like, priorities, like, about college. Yeah. College is starting to go way down in terms of, but a lot of, I think it's,
well,
like,
the value is almost non-existent at this point, unless you're in a real specialty area that you actually require the
podcasting 101.
Right, exactly.
But also, like, that, and I think a lot of people, it's, I think, 10% of the people who put, like, you know, you think, like, TikTok's full of crazies, but a lot of stuff online, like, 80% is put out by 10% people, so people think this is, like, the big view of everybody. It's not.
True. Yep.
And also, like, on Facebook, we'll get, like, the same people in the little bubbles. There's no disagreement, so you think this has got to be the way it is.
You know, speaking about TikTok, there's a new app out that's in competition with TikTok. It's called Clapper. Have you heard of this app?
No.
So Clapper is one of those, you can't get kicked off this unless you violate some very specific rules. So you can swear, you can talk about the government in any way you want to. It's an 100% First Amendment-driven app, this app, Clapper. But you can't be nude, and you can't have sexual things going on it. So I said, okay, I'm interested in that. I'm going to download it. So I downloaded it. Well, if you're on the main feed, it's all it is are TikTok videos that have been reposted to Clapper,
yeah,
right? And if you go to the live feed, if you go to the live feed on TikTok, there's some people that do some relatively professional shows. They're practiced at it. They know it. But if you go to the live feed on Clapper, oh, my God, talk about the Mississippi trailer park of apps. Literally, there are people sleeping in their wife beater t-shirts on live, and somebody talking to them, and every now and then they'll lift their head and go, "Oh yeah, man, that's cool." And I thought, you got to be kidding me, this is an app? If you want,
how did
they
even figure it out?
If you want some entertainment of where you're looking into a section of society that you don't really rub elbows with on a regular basis, download Clapper and go to the live feed because it is stunningly bad.
They make you go back to school.
Next time, I know you're going away for a trip too. That we have to do a show on venomous snakes or snake handling too. Oh, we'll have Greg handle the Gaboon Viper.
Okay.
Yeah, just sit a little bit further away from me, Greg.
Yes, I will.
We'll have Rose. There's actually, Greg, you have to, I'll send it to you. We've watched Dingo Dingleman's, this crazy guy in South Africa. He does a video where he's calling cabs to transport him and his pet anaconda.
That video was hysterical.
And he goes like that, and all the way, he's like, he's got under the seat cap.
Wow.
But there's a lot of myths about that, too, because, like, larger snakes like that, if you know what you're doing, and they're not really going to bother you.
Well, yeah, they have temperaments just like human beings do. Not exactly like that, but
we're poking them with a stick's not smart.
Right, that's absolutely true. But there are some that are docile and friendly and fun, and there are some that are just always angry. And it's just like every other animal, right? If you encounter a cat or a dog, do you know what they are before you actually interact? No, you don't.
Well, it's like Clint's reptiles. He's like he's like Mr. Rogers as a scientist. But he goes like this one about a reticulated python. Well, they're fairly docile, fairly smart, but the only downside is you got a pet who could kill you. Otherwise, you're really good. And the way he says it's so funny.
Oh, God.
There's a lot of videos of people. You know, I've sent some videos to you, Rob, around the people who are feeding crocodiles. and they're in barefoot. They're in the mud. They're right next to this pond in a fenced area where a crocodile is held.
Right.
And they're slapping the water with the leg of some animal, right, trying to get this crocodile to come up. And I said to Rob, at some point, there's going to be a video online of that guy getting clobbered by a crocodile. And it's the last we'll ever see of him.
Yeah.
Well, I'll add, this has been lots of fun, as always. It goes by, like, over an hour.
What a crock.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I have to say
that. There's a story. My good friend Jeff Bolte, he took martial arts, and he was down there. He went to Australia for, like, half a year. He came back. He literally had to get, like, something removed because it was almost going to turn to skin cancer from being down there. But he's down there. He's in an alligator farm. Crocodile farm, whichever. A woman sticks her hands in the fence, pulls back, her ring falls in there. So the guy goes, wait, goes out, he gets this huge frozen fish, he beats it on a rock, this thing comes out, and he throws it to the fish, and while it's dining on the fish, he gets the ring.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you got to distract him. You don't want him looking at you when you climb over that fence.
Yikes.
Speaking of martial arts, I do want to give a shout-out to my cousin Bernie. Bernie Kelly out of Cottonwood, California. It's Northern California, just south of Redding. He's actually in Okinawa right now with a group of his students from his dojo, and they're testing in front of his teacher, his master.
Uh-huh.
Four people of his group received their black belts this last week by testing in Okinawa, which is a pretty big deal.
Wow, that's
awesome. Ever hear the story about Steven Seagal, where I guess he flunked his Aikido thing 7 times?
Did he really?
But then, you know how he passed? And this has been a story I've tried to verify, but it's all over. I guess one of
Did he shit-talk the master?
What happened was the master was like, oh, this guy can't, he fell asleep. Oh. And he was embarrassed, so he just awarded him the belt.
Here, you have belt now.
But you ever hear the Richard Pryor thing? Richard Pryor's like, it's all this kung fu, so you're like, ah! And then the guy kicks him in the nuts.
Yeah. Go forth and kick ass.
That's great, because I know, like, you know, you've met Sammy. He's like a something degree, but he's been doing this stuff since we were teenagers.
Hmm.
That's really impressive. You talk about hard work and commitment.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It takes time and effort.
So, hi, Bernie. Congratulations.
Yes.
I think that's great. That's quite an achievement.
Oh, no doubt. He has his dojo. He owns a dojo in Cottonwood. He has somewhere around 60 or 70 students. So almost 10% of them, or 10% of them, went to Okinawa with him this last week. And pictures of them training, and just looks like a wonderful experience. But it's interesting because the dojo that his master owns in Okinawa does not have an address. So they give them a general area of where it is, and they have to go find it, right? Because there's not a perfect translation, but his master doesn't accept people just walking in. So if you showed up at the dojo and said, I would like to talk, they would just turn you away.
Wow.
You talking about the dojo or the podcast?
Sounds like the Batman Begins stuff.
If you want to get in the dojo, you must pick a flower.
Yeah.
You must bring it
up at the top of this fucking mountain. You see it up there?
Now, I love, I read a lot about martial arts. There's a really good book, Iron and Silk, but I guess, like, Aikido, too. Aikido is, like, it was used by the samurai to try to disarm, like, so it's totally reactive. So if you ask people who are in martial arts to, like, laugh in terms of, it's like, there's never been anybody who's won a competition with Aikido.
Because it's not a...
It's reactive. It's like, you were going to hit me with the bottle. I would know, but I have to, like, okay, do something.
Yeah.
You! Yeah. But this has been fun, as always. And
man.
Thanks for having
me on. Thanks for bailing us out.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure.
But we're going to try to... I know you're going away next month, but we'll try to get you on with Dan.
Yeah, going to Aruba.
And then we'll try to get you on, like, we're trying to get Bauman back on and everything.
That would be good.
That would be cool. It would be, like, you actually, like, we've been talking about, because I've been horrifying you about, you're not going to swim, are you?
Oh, I will definitely swim when I'm in Aruba.
I just see, like, a humble squid go, aha, I see a garbage plate.
Yeah, but at least in Aruba, you can see it at the bottom of the water.
Oh, so you're going to see what's going to eat you?
That's right.
So I'll tell you a real quick story about Aruba. My last trip was 7 years ago there. And we went out on to one of those pirate booze crews, right? So in a booze cruise with this one specifically, there were 3 sites that they went to that you could jump into the water and swim around. And then the 4th site, you got a swing. You could swing into the water and swim, right? And on the 4th site, I was asked to hold a camera, a waterproof camera. So I'm holding onto this camera, got onto this rope swing. So I've got two fingers on one hand, the other three are holding the camera, and a full fingers on the other hand. And I go to swing, and I decide I'm going to flip at the end and flip into the water, so do like a reverse somersault. And as I did that, I blew out my upper bicep.
Ooh.
It was the most painful thing I've ever experienced in my life.
Ow.
I'm swimming back to the boat, and my right arm is dragging behind me because I can't move it.
Oh.
Right? And I got onto the ladder, and I was able to get up onto the boat with one arm and 2 feet.
Dude, that's amazing.
Can you imagine, like, the sad thing about, like, my friend Rob said, like, when I dropped dead? He's like, dude, what if you're walking by the canal and you fell in the canal? When it's like, they're like, oh, they pull a bum out. Like, oh, Rob. Oh, there's Johnny. He's pretending he can drown. He's like, he's pretending he can't use his arm.
Oh, my God.
But I'll
God.
Leave it with a short one. I was talking about squids, the Humboldt squid. I saw this ocean guys photographing. They're changing colors, and they can get really nasty. So what happened was the other people go to the boat. They tried to drag him down.
Oh, man.
The only reason he got away was they got his back bit.
Wow. That's so, kind of scary.
But so we have like our promo. What's coming up for you, Greg? Everything, bro.
I played at Murph's last night with Brian.
Well, what
Lindsay.
Good is
it
that,
was fun. Well, it was great if you were there.
I
enjoyed it.
If you travel back in time.
I'll be at the B-side next Saturday, I believe. I should probably check that, but I think it's Saturday. With the Brian Lindsay Band again. And then I got other stuff coming up, but I'll...
We're still
right
looking
later.
For that 100th band, John.
Yeah.
If you want to start one?
Yeah, I would love to start a band.
And oh, we probably some people on from one of your new bands or whatever.
Yeah. So far, it's like the one thing I got right, so I'm going to keep at it.
John, you have your show and everything else.
John Adams Show, 106.3 FM, Wednesdays from 11
and
to 1.
And that's what, W-A-Y-O, right?
W-R-F-Z.
W-R-F-Z, I'm sorry.
I don't know, a couple
I get
weeks ago,
too confused.
A couple weeks ago, you had these guys on. I thought, I was like, would you get these guys from a lunatic asylum or something? That show on music? Hey, coming up over here.
I think you were there, Rob.
Well, wait a minute, which one is W-A-Y-O then? Isn't it?
I have no idea.
No, Wayo, I don't... I
isn't that 101 something? Or? I got him confused.
Because Mike Bracco, Mike Murray's channel, Lipstick and Adam's channel, Wendy's channel for Wayo. That's all I could think of. One arm is on. But coming up, too, Adrian is playing the Penthouse, which would be a really cool game.
Oh, I haven't been there yet. I got to get up there.
I actually used to clean that building.
It's and on the 20th at Record Archive.
Well, yeah.
420 coming up.
Yeah, man.
It's pizza day.
Yeah, but if you get down, you're not playing at one, but the big event on the 20th, and we're very privileged to hear music from it, is Primetime Funk is playing at the Theater of Innovation Square.
Ooh, nice.
And get your tickets now if you can. They're going to do Tower of Power, too, some stuff.
Pretty cool.
You giving away free pot cookies? I don't know.
I guess the keyboard player is going to be handing out ice cream before the show. So
uh-oh.
You see that.
Close enough.
So I have no idea what the Primetime Funk song is going to be, but it's going to be really good. And thanks a lot, John and Greg. And
thank
we'll,
you, guys.
We'll
thank
have
thanks, John.
More shows. Not
you're
today,
welcome.
Though.
Yep.
I'm going to Nazareth. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Please welcome to Primetime Funk and to the stage, Mr. Sean Powell.
And it comes a little something like this. Hit it! There's a place that everybody's going to. It's a place that's a place to be. The scene where everybody wants to be seen. Hey. If you choose to go and make a statement, your body will follow. You better be there way ahead of time or stand in line. Yeah. Everybody's gonna be. Yeah.
Thank you guys.